Good morning, everyone. If I can bring you to order, we do have an apology from the chair, and therefore it's up to members of the committee to appoint a chair pro tem.
Can I propose the leader, Owen Thompson?
Can I second that?
Good morning, colleagues. Thank you. Could I have a note of any other apologies?
Everybody else is present.
Okay. And order of business?
Order of business is published. There was an additional paper issued in respect of item number 9.
And any declarations of interest? Okay. Takes us to the minute of the meeting, 18th of March. Questions, comments? Happy to approve? Thank you. Which then takes us on to item 5, risk management update from the 1st of January to 31st of March by Head of Finance Integrated Service, Gary.
Chair, Chris Lawson, the risk manager, is here and he'll take us through the paper.
Hi, thanks, Chair. This report here presents the concluding quarter of 2013-14 and summarises the position for the Council in regards to corporate risks facing an organisation. There's been significant movement in relation to how the Council will manage risks going forward, and earlier this year I presented a report to Council's corporate management team setting out a revised policy approach and framework for the management of risk. This approach will see a far closer link between the service planning process and service risk registers, and will allow us to, from that process, clearly identify corporate risks. So at this time, this report concludes the corporate risk register as it stands at the moment, but I would expect some development of that in the 2014-15 risk register, both at a corporate level and a service level.
So, can I ask for any questions, comments? If I could maybe start then. If turn to page 14, section 2.6, we're talking about some concern not all significant pieces of new legislation adequately at risk assessed yet. I suppose first question is what are we doing about that? And is there a list of the outstanding issues that we are aware of, and are we confident that we know everything that's coming forward and is there a programme to incorporate?
I think that's a valid point, and that actually highlights one of the reasons for adapting the approach to risk management for next year. It's about identifying our service priorities and through the service planning process identify those new bits of legislation which may impact on the organisation's ability to deliver on our identified outcomes. So the new process will aid in identifying forthcoming legislation that's going to have an organisational impact.
Just the item on page 15, 2.7, Welfare Reform Act. Do we have any idea at all the impact this is going to have on the Council in monetary terms?
Chair, there's been reports to Council which have set out the impact on the housing revenue account in terms of the loss of or the increase in arrears. That will work its way through. Some of it's been mitigated against by the additional discretionary housing benefit payments that we can award and which are supported through the additional grant coming through and changes through Scottish Government. We anticipate that they probably will see an increase in the bad debt provision on the housing revenue account at the year end. That work's been carried out just now in terms of the 31st of March 2014 year end. And we'll see the final outturn. So you'll see in black and white the impact on the housing revenue account as we come to Council in June with the final outturn reports.
If we turn to appendix on page 21, balancing budgets in future years. I know that the list here talks about potential risks, the potential sub-risks, but I was just wondering, obviously missing external grant opportunities as a potential even is obviously something that we need to have a look at. Are we confident that at the moment we're managing to maximise our use of external grant opportunities? Or is this an area that we are concerned that there is actually significant risk of missing funding that could otherwise help us?
Chair, I think it is a sub-risk, and the more money we can get in, the less pressure on the revenue budget. I think I'd be comfortable that we're doing everything in our power to make sure that we access grant opportunities and that the funding bids that we put in, where those are required, are robust and are as strong and developed as they can be. And we've had some good successes recently.
On page 17, we're talking about difficulties recruiting the right staff. I thought we had a policy that we were not recruiting and tried to fill from sources within.
That is still the position, as far as I understand it, within HR, but obviously identified as a risk to the organisation if we can't recruit the right people for the positions that become vacant in the organisation.
Okay, I mean, clearly we do now have the agreed financial strategy of the council, which has to be encouraging. It gives us a clear direction. We have various tasks outlined in this report and actions to undertake. Obviously, we always need to be aware of the movement within the individual risks, but we do have a recommendation to simply note the quarter four report on corporate risks, and we're satisfied to do so. Yes? Thank you. That takes us then to item six, which is the annual governance statement. Kenneth.
Thank you, Chair. This report provides an assessment of the Council's compliance with its Code of Corporate Governance and invites the Audit Committee to consider and comment upon the draft statement. Clearly, as a Council, we have a responsibility for ensuring that our business is conducted in accordance with proper standards and with the law to ensure the best use of public funds and assets. And elected members and senior management are responsible for the governance. We have developed a code of corporate governance based on SIPFA and SOLAS frameworks in order to help in that task. And this includes, so the framework includes a requirement that the annual governance statement should be included as part of the financial statements and authorised by the leader of the council and the chief executive. And the background to the report sets out the approach we take to updating, monitoring this on an annual basis, and that includes inputs from all heads of service, from the monitoring officer, from internal audit, from the conclusions of external inspections, and indeed guidance is also provided by our external auditors. Attached to the report, we have the draft statement for 2013-14. That includes a summary of actions taken during that period to strengthen governance, and you'll also note that it sets out a number of areas of improvement to be progressed in 2014-15.
Questions, comments from colleagues? Colleagues satisfied with the report? Clearly, there's always more that can be done. The fact that there are a number of areas for improvement highlighted here gives us a focus for the following year to ensure that we undertake our roles to ensure delivery on the priorities we've set. Happy to agree the report. Thank you. It takes us in item seven, which is the self-assessment of the internal audit section.
Yes, thank you. Basically, the new public sector internal audit standards require that a self-assessment of the level of compliance against the standards be undertaken each year. With any material variances or non-compliance recorded within the governance statement. This is the first year that we have undertaken this assessment, and we have used a checklist provided by SIPFA to undertake the review. We found that overall there was a high level of compliance with some minor areas for improvement. These areas were in relation to sending out questionnaires to managers on the quality of audits undertaken, and requiring the internal audit team to complete annual returns on any potential conflicts of interest. Currently, we only do this when somebody joins the team. So the audit committee is invited to note the results of the self-assessment, the areas for development, and that the internal audit section will be subject to external assessment within the next 3 years. Thank you.
Thanks, Graham. Certainly, I think this was a particularly encouraging to see the high level of compliance with the benchmarks. One or two questions I did have on page 42, right at the top, we talk about review internal audit performance measures. The question was how often would we be looking to do that? And then the only other one really was on page 59, where we talk about the assessment team demonstrates competence in areas of professional practice and internal auditing. And the commentary there talks about these assessments not yet taking place. It was just the sort of when would that be planned for?
Well, basically, we intend to do these assessments every year on ourselves. And in terms of, I assume you're talking about the external inspections, the requirement is that they should be done every 5 years. We presented a paper, I think, to the last audit committee suggesting that the chief internal audit groups were setting up a process to do it internally. That actually went through and they're devising that process now. So it will certainly be done within the next 3 years.
Any other questions or comments? We have the recommendations outlined in the report. We're happy to agree these. Thank you very much. Which takes us then to item 8, which is the procedure for Audit Scotland's national reports.
National reports published by Audit Scotland are currently submitted to the Audit Committee throughout the year. They are also referred to the responsible officer within the Council to determine the local impact and to take forward any relevant recommendations in the report. Grant Thornton made a recommendation in their 2012-13 annual audit report that national reports presented to the Audit Committee should include a self-assessment against recommendations and plans for improvement. Management responded by stating that internal audit will review the way that national reports are currently presented to the Audit Committee. This will ensure that an identified lead officer will be responsible for submitting a report to the Audit Committee detailing Midlothian's response to any self-assessment or recommendations made in national reports. Internal audit has therefore drafted a proposal for presenting national reports to the Audit Committee, and this is set out in Appendix 1. We propose that internal audit track reports and remind management when deadlines are approaching. It is proposed that management should report back to the Audit Committee within 3 months of publication of the national report. And recent national reports that have been received and referred to the responsible officer are options appraisal, Are You Getting It Right?, an overview of local government in Scotland 2014, charges for services, Are You Getting It Right?, and procurement in councils. The Audit Committee is invited to review and approve the attached procedure.
Thank you. Personally, I think it makes a lot of sense, the procedure we have here. The one thing that I did wonder about was when we talk about the report tracker, is that something that would be accessible by members, essentially, so that we can always see what reports are in the system, if you like? I mean, it's great if we're getting told when the reports are coming out, but if we can know what we're looking forward to coming forward at a later date as well, was that something that's envisaged within this, or was it really just for internal audit to review the tracker?
It's really just an internal document for internal audit, just to keep a track of what's there and what's. But I mean, we can provide updates on a regular basis if members would like that.
Members happy to approve the procedure? Thank you. Which is then now taking us to the additional paper, item 9, which is the Internal Audit Annual Assurance Report.
Thanks, Chair. The Public Sector Internal Audit Standards state that the Internal Audit Manager is required to prepare an annual internal audit opinion and report that can be used to inform the Council's overall annual governance statement. This report therefore presents the work undertaken by internal audit during the financial year 2013-14 and provides an overall assessment of the Council's control framework based on that work. The conclusions arising from that work are set out in Appendix 1 of the report. Positive elements of the report are that the organisational independence of internal audit is effective and in accordance with the standards. The internal audit team are professionally qualified and possess the required knowledge, skills and competencies. The internal audit resource has been sufficient to complete a challenging audit plan, and a number of consultancy activities have been completed, which ranged in nature and included assistance with potential disciplinary investigations, fraud, review of housing allocations, and assisting the police with investigations. Whilst no areas were identified as having limited or very limited levels of assurance, we identified a number of areas that require improvement, such as the business transformation programme and mechanisms to ensure that the necessary financial savings are achieved and more efficient processes are introduced at reduced cost. Risk management and the mitigation of risks, controls over the accounts receivable system, the management of term contractors, compliance against the electronic payment guideline, and controls over access to the Framework I system. Each internal audit assignment has identified strengths and weaknesses, and overall I have found that internal controls have been implemented and are monitored by management in line with financial directives, council policy and the other key essentials of a robust internal control environment. Management is currently addressing the areas for improvement, and internal audit will follow up its recommendations in 2014-15. The audit committee is invited to endorse the annual assurance report and note that the weaknesses in internal controls identified in 2013-14 will continue to be followed up and updates will be provided to the audit committee. Thank you.
Thank you. I personally think the team have to be commended for the very wide-ranging work that's been undertaken in the last year. I think it's clear that from the fact that there's no limited or very limited levels of assurance, that the work is recognised and implemented strongly. And certainly looking back to not that long ago when we were having significant numbers of outstanding actions from audits, the fact that now only 4% overdue is encouraging. So I'd certainly welcome this report. Colleagues, any questions or comments? Happy to agree the recommendations at section 4. Thank you. And if I could just add and finally, we did have at the last audit committee, we agreed to, I think there was a presentation sent to Robert Ray on behalf of the committee to thank him for his contributions over the period. A letter has been received from Mr. Ray, and if with your indulgence, I'll just read that to the committee. I understand that you were, this, it was a letter to Councillor De Vinck. I understand you were the force that organised the most generous thank you copy of Tam O'Shanter at the end of my term in March 2014. The Berlin Limited Edition is most welcome, and I'm impressed with the coloured paintings and illustrations and the print quality. My father had a lifetime in papermaking, and I can recognise the high standard of the coated paper. I enjoyed my time in the committee and hope that I managed to bring some of my commercial world's experience to the benefit of the deliberations. I felt that we had come a long way over the 3 years, and at the end of term, debrief and appraisal dropped in a few matters I thought could still be tackled. Please thank all the signatories to the gift at the next committee meeting or before, and wish them all well in the future so they can carry on work in harmony for the benefit of the good folk of Midlothian. And that's with best wishes from Robert Ray. So just wanted to share that with the members of the committee. And I think with that, I thank you all for your attendance.